Oh, well, it's like everyone else. I mean, it's disappointing, isn't it? But I think it's hopefully this will do what needs to be done, and it'll see things mean that things look a lot better by the summer, I hope.
So what's open and what's closed at Dalston, and for how long?
So as before, I mean, we found in the first lockdown, seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? We the park's been really important to people, so we've had lots of people coming up and taking the daily exercise up here. I mean, I've seen walking up this morning actually, so many joggers today. the park is staying open. You can come up and use it. The car parks are staying open, and we're keeping the public toilets open at the learning centre. The castle, of course, is closed for now. Along with the cafe. But as I say, we encourage everyone to come up, take your daily exercise up here. It's lovely at the moment, lots to see. If you don't like mud, there's lots of nice new non-muddy bits you can walk on. And
It's a new bit of path.
yeah, we've got a nice new cut across Long Meadow as well. So you've got a nice circular route, all on hard surfaces. So that's good news. Also, we've
And
been,
this lockdown, this lo sorry to
yeah.
interrupt, this lockdown has really highlighted the vital importance of keeping Durlston open and the beauty spot that it is. It's playing a major role on people's mental health as well as physical.
Yeah, there's a lovely quote. It was a Victorian, no. Yeah, Victorian writer, I think, who said, "I go to nature to be soothed and have my senses put in order," which is exactly what it does for me in these weird times. There's something very reassuring, isn't there, about those sort of repeated rhythms of nature that, despite everything, buds are still bursting and birds are still singing, and nature's cracking on, no matter how weird the world is. So yeah, absolutely, I'd agree. It's really important, isn't it, for all of us.
We will look back on this moment in history and see how important Durlston Park was to the community of Swanage.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, and I think, the various lockdowns and restrictions have really opened a lot of everyone's eyes, really, to just how much nature means to us and how important it is for us. And I think, there was already lots of work before all this going on about looking at how we can make the most of the health benefits nature offers us. And I think as soon as this is all over, I think that's going to really push that movement even harder, really. And I mean, we've already been talking with colleagues in public health and with our local GP surgeries and medical practices, mental health services, about how we can work better together, along with our partners in the National Trust and the Wildlife Trust. And I think in the next few years we're going to see a real growth in sort of how we use the natural environment for our health, to support our health and well-being.
Has anyone said in the staff room yet that all the work that took place in 2019 and all the money that was spent, it came just in the nick of time?
So the Pleasure Grounds project obviously still is ongoing. It still has a few years to go. But absolutely, yeah, we were very lucky, really, to get a lot of the major capital work done just before the first lockdown. So the path construction, things like that, to be able to have that completed so that people could use the park at that stage was really valuable. Obviously, the restrictions are making some elements of the project a little more difficult, a little more complicated. We've extended the project by a year to give us a little bit more time to get those other things done. No more money to do it, but we've managed to spread our butter a little bit thinner, to make that happen, and just make sure that we can really deliver all the things we want to do. And yeah, work's still ongoing. We've got, fortunately, the lockdown restrictions do say that you're allowed to leave home to volunteer if your volunteering can't be done from home. So we've still got a number of volunteers working on the park who you might see if you're out and about, working as individuals or with people from their household or bubble, and doing things like dry stone walling, clearing ivy from some of the walls, and doing that sort of essential maintenance work that we need to keep the park running and keep the park accessible for people. We're also really pleased as well that there's an exemption for support groups. So we are able in a very limited form and outdoors to keep the shed operating, the Everyone Needs a Shed project. So under the government guidelines, we can do that for groups of no more than 15. So some of those isolated or vulnerable people who come to the shed don't really have a support network, they can still benefit from that. So as I say, it's being done very carefully, lots of social distancing, all outdoors, but it just means that we can continue to support those people through this really hard time. So that was brilliant news.
And the tree surgeons are in?
Yeah. We've got one final, well, probably final now, round of tree work going on. Not quite so extensive as the previous one, but that's paying more attention particularly to some of the trees around the viewpoints, to finish off opening up those views. Also around the Sunnydale area, so at the bottom of the hill, around the bridge and the stream, around there, just trying to get more light down to the woodland floor. Doing some crown lifting and just really helping that woodland regenerate, get more young growth, more small trees and shrubs going. They'll be working this week, first week of January and next week. There may be some temporary closures, but they're pretty good at working round people. So you may just be asked to divert or just to pause while they take something down.
Last time we spoke, you mentioned a new development that's will shortly be coming on stream when we get to the better weather and people feel more like enjoying the spring bursting forth, and that's the audio tours. Tell us more about how progress is going on those.
We're really keen to find lots of different ways for people to come and enjoy Durlston and explore Durlston. We've got our trail leaflets. In normal times, we've got guided walks. The audio tours are something new and different. So if you want to come and explore the park on your own, which a lot of us will be doing at the moment, but you'd like just to find out a little bit more, have a little bit more information or add something to the experience or get a different view on the place, we've started a series of audio tours. So the first one's been done by Rachel, she's been one of our young volunteers over the last few months, now volunteering from home because she lives in Hampshire. But she has produced a fantastic audio trail taking you around the clifftop. It's great. It's good fun. It's full of personality, and you can download that for free from our website. Download it onto your phone, and then you can come up and play the tracks as you go around and just find out a little bit more about the woodland, the clifftop trail. So what we'd love to do is add more of these. So I would say if there's anyone who's uses it, we'd love to get your feedback on it and hear what you think and how we can improve them for the future. Or equally, if there's anyone who'd like to make one for us, I've got some guidelines on how to do it. It's pretty straightforward. And if you've got an interesting take on the park, it could be you're an artist, it could be you're a naturalist, it could be you're someone who's known the area for many years and seen how it's changed, or sharing your thoughts on the place with other people, because it's how we all enjoy, people like people at the end of the day, don't they? And I think the best way to explain places is through people. So as I say, drop me an email, give me a ring up at the park if you're interested, and as I say, we'd love to create some more and get those up on the website for people to enjoy.
Lovely. And let's hear an extract from Rachel's tour, and we'll enjoy it for just a few seconds.
If you look at the panel in front of you and then look up, you can see Old Harry Rocks. The rocks are made of chalk, which is made of millions upon millions of fossilised plankton skeletons. Now, if you turn your head 90 degrees to the right, you will see the Isle of Wight, which is also made of chalk. Two big lumps of chalk, which are 14 miles away from each other, can only mean one thing. They used to be connected by a land bridge. Chalk is a sedimentary rock, which means it can crumble quite easily. So the sea slowly eroded away the land bridge until we were left with an island. A small island, but an island nonetheless. Along the Dorset coastline, Old Harry, despite his name, is the youngest rock. The further west you walk, the older the rock underneath your feet gets. Old Harry used to have a wife, but she died in 1897, murdered by the sea. No one alive today knows why the rocks are called Old Harry Rocks, but there are many rumours going around. One being it is named after the devil, who had the nickname of Old Harry. Another, that it was named after Henry VIII, who had a fort on the rocks before they separated from the land. A third story is that it was named after a pirate called Harry Payne. I personally think the second one is more viable, but I'll let you decide which one you believe. Now, before I keep rambling on, it's time you take off those headphones, listen to the wildlife, and enjoy the walk. See you at the next stop.
So that's Rachel Oldham with her Clifftop Trail, and it's on the Durlston website now for you to enjoy. Moving on, and some new stone benches are being put in place.
So we've had, over the last month or so, you may have seen them gradually being built. They're just at the sort of top of Long Meadow, at the sort of entrance to the pleasure grounds from up there. Many people will have seen and sat on and enjoyed the big new wooden benches that Alice Blogg created for us. We're adding some more benches at various strategic points around the pleasure grounds, because especially if you can't walk very far without a rest, benches are really important, I think, making the place more accessible to people. Or if you just want to sort of sit and relax and enjoy in your favourite spot in the pleasure grounds. So the ones we're adding at the moment, they're built all out of Purbeck stone. They're built into our dry stone walls. They're not in the way. And our apprentices, some of our volunteers have done a cracking job creating those. So they're almost finished, almost ready to sit on. And they've actually been sponsored. So some of those are commemorative benches where people have been kind enough to donate money to the project and to help us provide those. So we're really grateful to those sponsors. I won't name them, but
you can name them if you like.
there's quite a few, but we will be putting a list of all the people who sponsored them on the website in due course. So we've got people who've sponsored all sorts of different things in the project: benches, our new play trail, which will come in later this year. And there are still opportunities to sponsor things as part of the project, or more widely on the rest of the park as well. We've had people who've sponsored gates, who've sponsored dry stone walls, who just want to do something, you know, to help this wonderful place in memory of a loved one, or just because. Do get in touch if anyone's interested in doing that.
Oh, that's marvellous. Now, I've been out there walking the dog over Christmas and in the new year, and I've noticed that now that the cows have gone from the last position that I knew, which was around the lighthouse, along the approach road to the lighthouse. Where have they moved on to? Pastures new.
Yeah, so over the winter months, obviously, it's a really important time to get the grazing in. In the summer, we don't want to graze much because obviously everything's in flower. We need those flowers to support our butterflies. We've got nesting birds like skylarks nesting in the meadows and the downs. So we try and get in as much of the grazing as we can over the winter. Obviously, the downside of that is it can get a little bit muddy in some bits of the meadows. But obviously, that means, you know, we've tried to create all these lovely new mud-free areas of the park that you can come and enjoy. So what we've moved them out to now is they're out to the old landfill site. So we are now managing, as part of the country park, the former landfill site and the two fields next to it, a former quarry and a sort of grazed meadow, which we manage on behalf of Swanage Town Council. So it's been great to work with the town council. They still own that land. But they've leased it to us to manage as part of the country park, because it's actually cracking habitat out there. The landfill site itself, when it was capped, it was actually seeded with wildflower seed from Durlston, basically all it needs to maintain it really and improve it, we hope now, is a little bit of grazing That stops the coarse grasses taking over, it stops the scrub taking over, and it's potentially a lovely area for flowers, butterflies. So they're going to be grazing that sort of area over the next few months. The other two fields there, we're doing a variety of work, as I say, now that that's part of the country park. So on the old quarry site there, we've cleared quite a lot of scrub already. Again, it's a lovely potential bit of downland, great short turf species, great spot for orchids, great spot for those short turf flowers that are really important. I mean, Purbeck is one of the most important places in the country for downland. It's an internationally important habitat. We've got species here in Purbeck, like, for example, the early English gentian. This is the best place in the world for early English gentian. It only occurs in England, so. as I say, it grows only a centimetre or so high here. So if the turf gets any longer than about 50p, then you'll lose it. So it's really dependent on that short turf habitat. So often what we're trying to do with the grazing on the downs particularly is create a nice patchwork of different habitats. So very, very short turf. The cows do the initial work and then the rabbits keep it even shorter. We want slightly longer, coarser grasses for things like lower skipper. We want areas of bramble and small scrub, which are great for nesting birds. We want areas of bigger scrub. So that's what a lot of our work, our grazing and our cutting is designed to do on the downs, is create that sort of tapestry, that sort of patchwork, and as much variety of habitat as we can create in each area. So yeah, they'll be out there over the next few weeks doing a good job. Our lovely herd of Herefords, they're owned by a great local farmer, Paul Dyer, who many of you will know. I don't eat such things, but they're apparently also very delicious. When the cafe's open, you can get Dilston beef in the cafe, which is great in terms of food miles and ethical production as well. So they're doing a great job, and they're lovely animals as well. Herefords are very nice, friendly breed.
I have to say, when you were talking about the different methods that you have in managing the landscape, this is all very well thought out. There's nothing that you do that doesn't have a deliberate outcome, is there? You're not just there slashing back the scrub. You're encouraging it in some areas and cutting it in others.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think one of the really interesting things about the job is that we're always learning. There's no book that tells you how to manage Dilston except the one we are writing for ourselves as we go. We consider all the work we do very carefully because there are so many different factors in managing for wildlife and conservation. I mean, I suppose your starting point would be really, what are you trying to achieve? For any bit of land in this country, I think you could make a case for it to be almost anything. You could make a case for it to be woodland or grassland. If you want it to be grassland, what sort of grassland do you want it to be? So that's the first decision, is what are you trying to achieve? And that's one, the starting point really is looking around us, going, what's important internationally, what's important nationally, what's rare or declining or threatened? How does it fit in with the local picture? You know, what else is there of this habitat in Purbeck? What are the species in Purbeck that need more home, more space, or more support? Once you've done that, really, then you start to think about how you actually achieve that. So is it going to be grazed? Is it going to be cut? If you are cutting scrub, you've got considerations like, what's the wind doing? Are you trying to create a nice sheltered area for butterflies? What are people doing? You know, do you want to use the scrub to steer people away from more sensitive areas where they might cause damage, or to screen views so that the place doesn't feel too crowded? So yeah, there's a lot of different considerations about how we do it, and we certainly don't always get it right, but we're always trying to get it right, and we're always reviewing what we're doing, doing lots of survey work to understand what the effect of what we've done is. And I think it's what makes managing a place like this very challenging, but also very, very fascinating. And as I say, I think it's interesting in this country. Our landscape in this country has been managed by people for many, many thousands of years. There hasn't been wilderness in this country for thousands of years. So you can't take people out of the picture. Our landscape needs to be managed. All of our landscape really has had human impact at some point, and most of our most important habitats for wildlife are ones which have been created because of human activity. Meadows wouldn't exist if it wasn't for people. Hedgerows wouldn't exist. Heathland wouldn't exist. So all of those habitats are now here and have value, and as I say, are squeezed more than ever. So as I say, it's important that we do actively manage our landscape in this country. I think sometimes the word rewilding is heard a lot at the moment and used a lot at the moment, and it's valuable work, but I think it's sometimes people can be slightly misled by the word. So rewilding shouldn't be about just letting nature do its own thing. Unfortunately, that wouldn't work in this country. We don't have enough space for wildlife, for a true wilderness to exist. If we left Dealston alone, if we stopped any cutting and grazing and all of those things, what we'd end up with in 30 years is a load of blackthorn scrub. What we'd end up with in 100 years is fairly low biodiversity woodland. What we've got at the moment is fantastically diverse and internationally important grassland and downland. So sometimes, you know, leaving nature to its own devices is not the best thing to do. You know, if you've got a huge area of wilderness, that kind of works, because within that wilderness you will have different habitats will naturally create themselves. Whereas in this country we've got these very small, very fragmented habitats, and habitats which we've created over thousands of years, but which have a real importance for wildlife. So yeah, that's really why our countryside, I think, needs to be actively managed, and why it's not always easy to make those decisions as well about what to do with any bit of land.
And how do you reach those decisions? Do you all put your heads together in a staff meeting once a week?
So what a lot of those are sort of summed up in our management plan for the parks. We've got quite a detailed management plan, as I say, which has been written and developed and improved over the last 40 years of management as we learn more and more about what works, what doesn't work. It's constantly being reviewed and changed, because obviously things are changing fast. Climate change is having quicker and quicker impacts on the park. And that's been created with input from all sorts of different people. So one of the challenging things, if you ask a bird expert, perhaps they might say that we need more trees and more scrub at Dealston to benefit those birds. So that's great, let more trees. If you ask a butterfly expert, they might say we need to cut down scrub and create more grassland for butterflies. If you ask a mining bee expert, they might say we need more disturbed ground and bare ground at Dealston to benefit the mining bees. So obviously our job is to go and find all those experts, listen to all those experts, and then try and find a way forward that achieves all of those things, balancing those different objectives. Obviously, and we've also then got to figure into the picture people, so how people can use the park for recreation. So a lot of that we do, one of the tools we use is we manage the park in three zones. We might have what we call the intensive zone, which is the area around the castle, the car parks, the clifftop. And if you like, that's the area where the balance is more towards people and recreation and leisure. So we're putting people first and thinking about how can we make nice surfaces to walk on, nice interpretation for people to look at, things for people to enjoy within that area and make their visit really enjoyable. At the other end of the spectrum, we've got what we call the remote zone, and out there there's plenty of access, people can still go there, but we're putting the balance more towards wildlife and what wildlife needs. So that's a way of combining in what's really quite a small site. It's 340 acres, combining all those different things together, keeping areas of the park that feel wild and peaceful and tranquil and have loads of wildlife value, providing all those facilities that around 250,000, 300,000 visitors to Dealston a year need, and as I say, balancing those different things together. So that's one of the tools we use in our planning of what we put where. So, for example, you might find, you know, in the intensive zone, you'll find benches, you'll find bins, you'll find permanent artworks. You wouldn't find those things out in the remote zone. So, as I say, it's just a way of guiding our thinking. But that thinking's always having to change. And as I say, as new evidence comes along, as we conduct new survey work, as we get new expertise from different people coming in, that's really helpful as well. So it's constantly under review.
What about the wildlife, the fauna?
Yeah, it's so obviously down in the depths of winter now, it's perhaps not quite as showy as it is in June, but there's still loads to see. So we've had some great seabird sightings over the last few weeks. Winter's a great time to get out on the clifftop and look for seabirds. We've had the guillemots have been in on the ledges fairly regularly, just revisiting. Not settled here yet. They'll be settling in sort of February, March time, ready to breed, but they've been visiting very, very regularly. We've also had lots of large movements of auks, of guillemots and razorbills passing by. So over the winter, they're moving around in large groups to feed. So some mornings we've had sort of literally thousands of auks going by. So they've been great. Usual things like the sort of Brent geese and the Scoter, so usually way out in the distance, sort of nose to tail out along the horizon, passing by sea ducks like Scoter. Kittiwakes been around. I love seeing kittiwakes in winter, actually, because when you've got a really foul day and it's blowing a hooli, they look impossibly delicate to be out and about in such things, but they've certainly been around as well. So lots of good seabirds to see at the moment. Lots of nice sightings of peregrine down on the cliffs as well. There are still a few flowers in bloom even at this time of year. You know, if you look, you're out and about at the moment, it's a nice little plant. It's not a native species, it's a garden escape, but it's sort of naturalized, really, called winter heliotrope. Lovely name, lovely smell, sort of some people say vanilla or some people say marzipan. It's not the showiest looking flower, sort of scruffy pink looking flower, but that's in bloom at the moment, along with a few dandelions out at the moment as well, aren't there? So even in the middle of winter, there's still a bit around. Ivy's just starting to go over now. Ivy obviously blooms weirdly in the autumn winter and then has berries in the spring, a little bit back to front compared to a lot of plants. But then that does mean that those insects that are around at the moment still have some nectar sources about at the moment as well. So yeah, I mean, as I say, sometimes you have to hunt a little bit harder for the wildlife at this time of year, but it can be very rewarding. I mean, sea watching, I always think it's a little bit like goalkeeping. You get these long periods where absolutely nothing happens, and then suddenly you get a quick moment of excitement. And I think watching seabirds can be a bit like that. As I say, you know, it makes it all the more rewarding when you do get those lovely lovely moments of an experience with wildlife.
Now, you mentioned earlier in our chat that the tree surgeons are back in, clearing some of the trees. Does that mean that there is some wood for sale?
Yeah, we're very keen that where we are taking trees down, so some of that timber and brash is used for habitat piles. Rotting wood is just as important as standing wood for wildlife, so we're going to be leaving plenty of it around to rot down. Some of it we're going to be using for sort of path edging, things like that, or dead hedging. But yeah, we've got some byproducts of that conservation work we've been doing in the woodland over the last few years for sale. So we've got logs seasoned for a year, and we can actually deliver those to anywhere in Swanage for £90 a load, which is pretty good value, I think. And it's wood that's, as I say, is good conservation wood as well, so you can feel a warm glow of satisfaction as well as a warm glow from your fire as well, that it's doing some good by buying it. So if you're interested, just get in touch with us and we can deliver some.
Great. Looking back at Christmas seems like a long time ago now and a different world, but how did it go? Did you have a good Christmas at Durlston Country Park?
Yeah, it's obviously a little bit different. We weren't able to do our usual FOD Christmas party and things, so we actually took it online. We did a Zoom Christmas do, and with the usual party pieces, entertainment, well, I use the word loosely, from the staff, and a little quiz. And yeah, we had a nice, really nice turnout of Friends of Dalston and volunteers joining in with that. So that was really nice just to touch base with those people we haven't been able to see as much or at all over the last months or year. So that was really good. We did have our Christmas trail up and running so that families could come and explore the park, and that seemed to go very well. I think Emily in the cafe had some Christmas specials and things on. She's obviously now closed. It's going to be a tricky few months for her, but she's really passionate, really committed, and can't wait to open up again when she can. So as soon as she's reopened, do come and support her. Yes, Christmas was good, really. So
And it's hopefully next Christmas is going to be completely different, and we'll be somewhat back to normal. Alistair, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Alistair Tuckey, ranger at Dalston Country Park, joining us once more. And we'll do it all again in about another month, Alistair.
Yes, lovely. Thank you. Look forward to it.